A cancer diagnosis is a life-changing event. Once surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation treatments are complete, cancer survivors still face the challenge of living with the possibility that the cancer could return. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. For the next hour, we'll talk about life after cancer with a team of experts from St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids. We'll talk about the importance of exercise and nutrition and the challenges of changing a lifetime of habits. We'll also talk about the emotional challenges, such as living with the fear of recurrence. A cancer survivor will be here to tell her story, and we'd like to hear your story as well. Are you a cancer survivor? Have you changed your lifestyle? Join the conversation after the news. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. A cancer diagnosis is a life-changing event. Surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation treatments can be an ordeal, but the journey doesn't stop there. Today, we're going to talk about life after cancer, the challenge of staying healthy, the fear of the cancer coming back. And with me in the studio today is a team of cancer treatment specialists from St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids. And we'd like to hear from you as well. Are you a cancer survivor? How did the experience change you? Have you changed your lifestyle after treatment? And how do you cope with the fear of recurrence? You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I want to start today with Julie Thompson. She's a nurse practitioner and a cancer risk counselor with St. Luke's Hospital. She's also a cancer survivor. And Julie, let's start. I know you have a lot of expertise to share as well today, but let's start with your story. When were you diagnosed with cancer?
I was diagnosed 13 years ago, back in 1997. I was only 39 at the time. And I was, I guess you could say, on the lookout for cancer because my mother had been diagnosed with breast cancer when she was only 50 and then consequently passed away 2 years later. So I was very, very vigilant about doing breast self-exams. And sure enough, found a lump.
When you went to get the lump checked, what was the prognosis?
Well, I pretty much knew sort of in my gut, I guess, right away that I thought that it was breast cancer. And that is what it turned out to be. It was the kind of breast cancer that is really hard to find on a mammogram. It's called lobular breast cancer. And it tends to feel more sort of just like dense breast tissue instead of a really, you know, specific lump. So the tumor itself was actually pretty big. It was about 4 centimeters inside, four to five centimeters in size. So at first we didn't think the prognosis might not be so good because the tumor was so big. But here I am 13 years later. Still going.
What kind of treatment did you go through?
Well, I was pretty aggressive with my treatment, and that was my decision to make. And of course, everybody makes their own treatment decisions with help. But because I was so young, because my mother was also young when she was diagnosed, I chose to have a bilateral mastectomy. So in other words, I had both of my breasts removed, and then I had chemotherapy. After that, and then after my chemotherapy was done, I also had radiation, and then eventually had breast reconstruction done as well. So I sort of did the whole thing.
You were 39 years old. Are you a mm-hmm. mom?
I am.
How old were your kids when this happened?
I have two boys, and they were both in middle school at the time.
What went through your mind when you were diagnosed with cancer at age 39?
Well, it was scary. Very scary. And I think, you know, as a mom, I think what most women are thinking about is I want to be there for my kids as they grow up. I want to see them graduate from high school. I want to see them go to college and do all those normal things. So I was optimistic, and I was very determined to do everything that I could do that was available to me.
While you were getting the treatment, of course, you were doing everything that you could do mm-hmm. that was available to mm-hmm. you. When that was over, mm-hmm. and you look to the future, what kinds of thoughts were going through your head then?
Well, I think that every cancer survivor, when treatment stops, it's great on the one hand, but on the other hand, that's when you sort of start thinking, okay, if this comes back, how am I going to know it? What are the tests that people are going to do? When is it going to happen? You sort of still feel like a ticking time bomb.
And you were young. You certainly look like a healthy woman today. Were you in shape? Did you feel like you were not at risk for this kind of thing?
I did feel like I was at risk because of my family history. I wasn't certainly at risk because of my lifestyle. I did have a good lifestyle. I was, you know, fairly in shape and ate well, and I didn't smoke, and, you know, very not that much alcohol consumption. So I was doing all the right things. My component was probably more so the family history than anything else.
Did you change your lifestyle at all after treatment?
I did. I started trying to exercise more and watched what I ate. I know that's an important thing to do. So I tried to keep that up, and I'm still trying to do that today. It's not always easy, but you give it your best shot.
Well, I want to make sure when I'm asking these questions, and we'll talk about this more throughout the hour, I think that when we talk about wellness for cancer survivors and the importance of exercise and diet, in a way, it almost sounds like we're saying, well, if they'd done these things beforehand, mm-hmm. then they wouldn't have gotten cancer. And mm-hmm. and certainly that is not true.
That's right. It's not true. Yeah. I mean, it's true that diet and exercise certainly can play a part in helping prevent cancer. And it certainly helps if you're a healthy person and you're a good weight and you are, you know, that certainly makes you more able to fight off infections and your immune system is better prepared to deal with things. But it's certainly not a given that cancer won't happen to you.
Since this was you had a genetic predisposition to getting breast cancer, at least mm-hmm. you believe that you did. Mm-hmm. Were there other medical considerations that you needed to think about after treatment to try to prevent this kind of cancer from coming back?
Not really for me, because I had pretty much done everything that even someone who had a genetic predisposition would have taken care of. So if I hadn't have chosen to have bilateral mastectomies, or if I hadn't chosen to have fairly aggressive chemo and radiation, then there might have been more issues that I could have done.
Of course, you work with cancer patients. You work with people to determine their genetic predisposition to having cancer.
Yeah, I didn't at the time.
Okay, but cancer is a big part of your life. But how often do you think about your cancer now?
Rarely, actually, which is odd considering what I do every day. But I think that it really is true. And I tell people this all the time. And it's hard, especially for those who either have just been diagnosed or even are out of treatment, say, even 2 to 3 years, is that at first, yeah, you think of it coming back every day. That's pretty much what you know, wake up thinking. But it actually does get better and better the longer that you're out of treatment. You do think about it less and less. Even somebody like me, who that's all I do every day, is see cancer patients generally.
Well, Julie, thank you so much for sharing your story. And I want to broaden the conversation now and introduce Amy Gonski. She's a nurse practitioner at Iowa Blood and Cancer Care of Physicians Clinic of Iowa. And also Emmy Chapman. She's a registered nurse, and she's also the cancer wellness coordinator at the Cook Cancer Wellness Program at St. Luke's. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you.
And again, I understand that cancer is a journey, and all of you here in this room today work with individuals at different places along that journey. But I do want to focus on what happens after treatment today. And Amy, let me start with you. I know that you do work with patients on long-term survivorship. What kinds of things do you talk to a patient about after treatment has ended?
We start with when they've completed their therapy, we sort of summarize their treatment. And then we develop a plan with them for monitoring their cancer follow-up. We give them a survivorship prescription that outlines important things that they need to focus on, such as, you know, the basic things that we all know after cancer diagnosis of going in and getting your mammogram or getting your colonoscopy. But then we also focus on lifestyle changes. And as Julie said, it was, you know, a lot of people going through treatment, you're actively doing something. And when you get done, it's about what can I now do for myself to prevent this from coming back? And so we talk a lot about diet and exercise, health promotion, disease prevention, things that they can do to help decrease the risk of their cancer coming back.
All right. And Emmy, I know that you also go through a similar routine with cancer patients, and you sit down and you talk about how to create a wellness program for each individual. What kinds of things do you talk to the patients about?
When the patients come to the wellness program, I bring them into the program and go through all the different components that we have to offer and kind of find out what their areas of need and interest are. And we have exercise, nutrition, nutritional counseling, and then we have what we call our quality of life section, which includes a lot of counseling, classes, different treatments, and some complementary therapies that help with a lot of those psychosocial issues that sometimes are not addressed as much during the actual treatment and things that they're dealing with. So just trying to find those areas of need for them at that time.
Spell out for me a little bit more some of the psychosocial areas where you work with people.
We have different classes available for people, a couple different classes that they can take. We have counselors available, whether it be for the individual, also for their caregiver, family. Sometimes you have children that are having a hard time dealing with a diagnosis. Sometimes there's things that patients are dealing with even, you know, 2 to 3 years down the road that maybe just weren't dealt with in the past, and that fear of reoccurrence and fear of things happening. It could be relationship issues, even, you know, to do with the family, that we have counselors available for them to meet with.
When somebody finishes treatment, again, you mentioned that now they're not doing something active anymore, so they need to find out some things that they can actively do. What, beyond the fear of recurrence, what are some of the emotional issues? And we have just a moment here, so maybe you can give me just a tidbit about them, and then we can go into more detail in a moment. What are some of the other emotional issues that people deal with?
Probably the biggest one that I see with people coming in to the program that I've met with have been a lot of women, especially. I've seen this more so with just how they're feeling about themselves. It could be body image issues and changes that have happened dealing with a surgery, and kind of trying to figure out who they are now that they've maybe lost a breast or have had different things happen with their body.
Maybe lost their hair and look like a different person.
Yeah, and just trying to figure out kind of who they are now that they have cancer.
We're talking about life after cancer today on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about life after cancer, after the radiation treatments, after the chemotherapy, after surgery. What happens next? I have with me a team of specialists from St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids today. Julie Thompson is a nurse practitioner and a cancer risk counselor with St. Luke's. She was also kind enough to share her own cancer survivor story with us today. Amy Gonski is a nurse practitioner at Iowa Blood and Cancer Care Physicians Clinic of Iowa. Emmy Chapman is a registered nurse and the Cancer Wellness Coordinator for the Cook Cancer Wellness Program at St. Luke's. And also with us is Matt Schmitz. He's the Cancer Exercise Specialist, or one of them, at St. Luke's Cook Cancer Wellness Program. And Matt, I know that you work with cancer patients not just after, but also during their treatment for cancer. What kinds of things can you help someone with through exercise when they're going through their cancer treatments?
Well, the most important part about going through exercise during treatment is it takes a lot of the side effects away, the nausea. A lot of people have trouble sleeping, anxiety. All those can be affected by the exercise. It seems like the more they're exercising, the less likely they are to have those side effects. So it really helps with the side effect factor.
When someone comes to you and you need to put together an exercise program for them, how do you start?
I initially have a consultation with them. Beforehand, I see their medical history, so I know what type of cancer they have, the treatment that they're either expecting to have or what they had in the past. And then we sit down, and the first thing we talk about is goals, what their goals are. And it usually starts out that the goals are very broad. And as we're going through it, then I take some body measurements, and we run some different tests. We run some strength tests, endurance, so your balance, flexibility. And then after that, we sit back down and go over the goals again. And it's really amazing how those goals change from the beginning to the end. At the beginning, it might have been to lose weight or to gain some strength. And at the end, it's, you know, I want to gain strength so I can play with my kids again. So it's much more personal at that time. And then I can really push them towards those goals and make it easier for them where they can see it and achieve it. So really, I try to make that their goal specific and their exercise specific to that person rather than just a regular exercise plan for anybody.
And we've been talking about being healthier and preventing a recurrence of cancer through a healthy lifestyle. But also, you're helping people who have lost a lot through the process of treating their cancer. What kind of challenges do you see along those lines?
The biggest thing that I see is the muscle weakness. Usually between the ages of 30 and 50, a normal person loses about 10% of their muscle mass anyway. And then you combine that with a lot of the treatment side effects, and that muscle loss decreases dramatically. With that, a person might be 35 but feel like they're 65 because of that decreased muscle. And then that brings down their spirit. They feel weak. They feel like they can't do the things that they once could. So not only am I making them stronger, but I'm also helping them mentally. The other big thing that I see is balance issues. There's a lot of side effects that affects your nerves and also that muscle weakness where if your balance is off, it keeps you from doing the things that you really enjoy, just playing with kids, walking. People are afraid to walk because they're afraid that they might fall. And if they fall, they know that they're going to be farther down than where they were before. So those are some big things that I really work on with people.
Do you work with a lot of people who have never exercised before?
There's two combinations. There's the people that have never exercised before, and the cancer diagnosis is kind of a life-changing experience where they think, you know, here's a chance for me to better myself, to work myself to reduce that risk of recurrence. But then there's also the people that I see that were avid exercisers, and they're coming to me to say, okay, what can I do or what shouldn't I do now? Because it does change after
the
diagnosis.
A whole different set of challenges for each of those groups. When somebody comes to you who's never exercised before and they're in a weakened state, how do you help them get started? Because I think anybody who's ever tried to start an exercise program from scratch knows it's really hard. But I can only imagine that it's much harder after you've just gone through all of these treatments and all of this time. How do you help somebody start?
I think that's where it goes back to the goals section. Usually I try to incorporate it to something that they're having trouble with, where it's in their mind and they say, okay, I really want to do better at this. And then I'll focus on that one aspect. For many people, it's things that they can do at home, standing up, sitting down, squats, other bodyweight exercises where they can see results quickly. And with that, they want more. They say, okay, I'm feeling better. I know I'm stronger. And I can retest them a month later, and they physically see that on paper, and they feel the difference. And then it's much easier for them to continue.
And with the people who come to you who were avid exercisers before, I can also imagine that that must be just enormously frustrating to not feel strong, to not be able to do the things that they could do before. What kinds of emotional issues do you find these people dealing with?
Well, that's actually, I think, sometimes harder with those people because they were an everyday exerciser. And now they try and they say, you know, I can't do the things that I once could. And if they try to push too hard, too fast, it actually knocks them back. So it's a gradual increase. And as you put it on paper, you can show them, you know, in the past month, here's your gains. And if we continue on this scale, you know, 2 months from now, you're going to be back to where you were before. And once they start to see that, that competitive spirit comes back. So for many times with them, it's reining them back from pushing themselves too hard so they don't injure themselves, because they are in a weakened state when they do come in.
Amy, I want to bring you back into the conversation. And also, if you are a cancer survivor and you have a story to share, we'd love to hear from you about the challenges that you faced after treatment ended. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. One of the components of treatment that we haven't talked about yet is nutrition. So, Amy, when you start working with people, how do you approach the whole idea of a healthy diet?
The primary focus that we have is teaching people to change their lifestyle, to eat healthy and not diet. You know, it's a complete lifestyle change. So the main thing is 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, a low-fat, well-balanced meal, rich in calcium. So basic information that we all, you know we should be doing, and just reinforcing that every time we see them.
I know that after I've been sick, and I've never been through cancer, but after I've been sick with something, often as I'm recovering, I think, oh, I deserve a little more. I deserve a break. Do you find that that's a pitfall that cancer survivors fall into, too? Because they certainly deserve a break.
Right. I think that's a pitfall they fall into during treatment, especially as your family and friends and neighbors are bringing you treats and taking care of you while you're sick. So we really focus on it is their time to take care of themselves, to, you know, we try to empower them to be part of their cancer survivorship and have them focus on themselves and being healthy after treatment.
Julie, did you experience that, or have you worked with other people who have experienced that sort of mental block of, I just survived cancer. Why do I have to do exercise and eat things that I don't necessarily like?
Yeah, well, yes, I think that's a challenge for everybody. And I think that I will say that it is okay to slip up every once in a while and to give yourself that treat, or to give yourself, you know, okay, I'm not going to, you know, maybe take this walk today. And but as long as you just get right back into the habit, I think that that's okay. But yeah, we deserve treats every now and then.
Absolutely. Emmy, I want to ask you, as the wellness coordinator, when you talk to people about their needs, is it hard to really find out what their needs are? Are people good at actually verbalizing what they need help with?
That really depends on the person. Some people come in knowing exactly what they want from the program. They've heard a lot about it, read a lot about it. They come in and wholeheartedly know exactly what they want to do. Most of the time, they end up finding out things with our program that they didn't know about and are interested in other aspects too. There's a lot of times that people come in because maybe Amy has recommended them to come over and they're not really sure, but they're going to come and check it out. And I think they come in with a notion of, okay, I'm just going to come talk to this person and we'll see. And they leave with this great attitude of, you know what, this is great. And I didn't realize this was all available and this is exactly what I need. It really just depends on kind of where they are with their treatment and kind of with their frame of mind at the time.
Lynn is on the line in Iowa City. Hello, Lynn.
Hi.
Hi there. And you are a cancer survivor.
Yes, I am.
When were you diagnosed?
I was just diagnosed in 1995, just about like 4 days short of my 28th birthday.
Oh, wow. And what kind of cancer did you have?
I had breast cancer, and I had a lumpectomy, and then followed that up with chemotherapy for 6 months and radiation.
I can't imagine going through that as a 28-year-old. As you got through all of that treatment and you looked to the future, you're still very young. What kinds of things were you thinking about?
Well, we were just about ready to start a family. My husband was in graduate school, and it was just devastating because every child I saw, every diaper commercial for like a month or so, I would just start to cry because I'm like, wait a minute, this is messing up my plan. And even if I do have a child, will I be around for it? And, you know, just going off the deep end emotionally. But I needed to find some way to feel like I was helping to cure myself. And I decided that I needed to switch diet. I've always been a healthy eater, but I was reading up from like Vegetarian Times and other sources just that animal fats were going to feed my cancer. And if I had fatty breast tissue, why would I want to provide more of a home? So I cut way back, and I've really much, pretty much remained a vegetarian.
And taking that action, did that help you with all of the other emotional things that were going on? Did that make you feel like you were doing something for yourself?
Oh, absolutely, because I'm very much type A and a control freak. So that was feeling, that was like something I felt like I could control and that I was being proactive. It helped immensely.
And you are a mom now?
Yes. I am a mom with a fourth grader, and last fall about this time we had another baby unexpectedly, and it's a wonderful joy every day to have these children, even though I didn't know if I was ever going to have them.
Wow.
I'm very lucky.
Well, that's terrific. How often do you think about your cancer now?
Well, this month is always brings up to the forefront, of course. I'm not as much as I used to. I mean, there were times where I'm like, wow, I had that. And it just seems surreal because it was such a long time ago now. But I would say, no, it doesn't weigh on me, but I still make the same choices I'm going to make now to take care of myself. And I'm very active. I call it my antidepressant when I have my exercise. So, it's all about just making sure I'm around for my kiddos and my spouse.
Do you have a daughter?
No.
No. Okay. No. I'll talk more about when people go through breast cancer. I'm sure if they have a daughter, that's a worry that they develop. But Lynn, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having us on your program today.
Oh, thanks a lot. And if you have a story to share, you can call us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Lynn was a very young woman when she went through cancer, but I know it doesn't matter what age a person is. And I know that breast cancer in particular is something that really people can suffer a lot of body image problems, but I'm sure any kind of cancer carries that risk. Emmy, how do you work with people who feel ugly, who feel like cancer has changed their body and made them unattractive or maybe impacted their relationships with their spouses or other loved ones?
Well, when we have somebody come into the program, and if that's something that they're sharing with me or maybe when working with Matt in the exercise program or with our social worker, Nancy, we have different therapists available to meet with them. We have a sex therapist who's in the community that works with patients regarding body image issues or relationship issues, and she's been a wonderful asset for people to go to. But really just providing them those tools to work with people and just kind of sort out those emotions and deal with them more in the forefront.
Is that something that it's hard for people to share with you?
It is. It seems to be a conversation that we usually meet for an hour, hour and a half maybe, and those are things that kind of come out towards the end of the conversation after we get to know each other a little bit and they're feeling a little more comfortable. And some people never really are reaching that comfort level. Some people come in right away and say, look, this is a problem, and I know that this is the wellness program and you have this availability and I need to talk to somebody. And some people, it takes a lot longer for them to open up, but we're just glad that we have the availability for them to do that.
And Matt, Emmy mentioned you, and you're, of course, working with people on exercise programs, but do you find yourself having conversations about some of these other issues that people are dealing with?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things is Emmy meets with them usually once for an hour, like she said, longer if they have more questions. And she'll occasionally meet with them again as a checkup. But I'm meeting with these people 1 to 2 hours a week. So we have a very good relationship. I know everything about their family, their friends, their dogs, their pets. So things come out. And it's easier for me after we get to know each other, you know, to simply ask, you know, would you like to talk to somebody about that? And sometimes they're hesitant, but other times they're like, yeah, you know, maybe it would help. So that's what's nice about the Cook Cancer Wellness Program is that everybody's coordinated. We have weekly meetings where we're talking and you say, you know, maybe this person would benefit from this. Let's get them the help that they need. So it's much easier that way.
You can really look at the whole person, yeah. Not just your part of helping them.
Yeah, it's exercise, but there's a lot more that's involved throughout the program.
Today we're talking about life after cancer, and I have a team of cancer specialists with me today from St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids. Julie Thompson is a nurse practitioner and cancer risk counselor with St. Luke's. Amy Gonski is a nurse practitioner at Iowa Blood and Cancer Care of Physicians Clinic of Iowa. Emmy Chapman is a registered nurse and the cancer wellness coordinator for the Cook Cancer Wellness Program. And Matt Schmitz is also a cancer exercise specialist at the Cook Cancer Wellness Program. We are talking about life after cancer and some of the challenges that cancer survivors face, both in the short term and in the long term. And if you have a story to share, we'd love to hear from you. The number to call is 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about life after cancer. After all of the treatments have been done, what happens next? The journey is long for cancer survivors, and I have with me today a team of people who work with cancer survivors. Julie Thompson is a nurse practitioner and cancer risk counselor with St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids. Amy Gonski is a nurse practitioner at Iowa Blood and Cancer Care of Physicians Clinic of Iowa, also in Cedar Rapids. Emmy Chapman is a registered nurse and the cancer wellness coordinator for the Cook Cancer Wellness Program. Matt Schmitz also works with that program. He's a cancer exercise specialist at the Cook Cancer Wellness Program. And we're talking about all of the many challenges that face cancer survivors. We'd love to hear from you as well. If you're a cancer survivor, tell us how you faced the future. What did you do to change your lifestyle, or how did you overcome the emotional hurdles of being a cancer survivor? The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Amy, after someone has gone through all of this treatment, of course, there is a lot of information available about cancer. Some of it correct, some of it incorrect, but there is this constant amount of information that's coming out in magazines and on the internet. How do you see patients coping with having all of that information coming at them?
It can be very confusing for our patients. They will get on the web or talk to someone who had a friend who had cancer and come to us with all sorts of questions, things that are true and not true. So we do encourage people before they start some fad diet that's supposed to prevent cancer or some herbal supplement that's supposed to prevent cancer, they come in and talk to us. And we do have people bring in magazine articles and come in and tell us about something they heard from one of their friends. And we try to refer them to reputable sources, you know, the National Cancer Institute or the Lance Armstrong Foundation or American Cancer Society, rather than just going off of what they read about, you know, on the latest website about cancer.
Do you try to teach them to figure out what is actually coming from a reputable source and what could be just pushing a product or be someone's idea?
Yes, we do. We especially want to make sure that they're not spending a lot of money on some supplement that they've read about or seen on the web. And so we really ask that if before they start anything, change anything, do anything different, they call us. You know, we're always available for questions, or write it down and ask us at their next appointment. And we're usually seeing them, you know, every 2 to 6 months for 5 years, depending on where they're at in their survivorship. So they have lots of opportunities to ask those questions.
How about you, Emmy? Do you deal with a lot of information that people have sought out themselves or their family members have found and given to them?
Yeah, somewhat we do. And we have a binder that we give each of our patients when they're enrolled in the wellness program that talks about all the different components of the program. And in the back of that binder, we do have a resource guide that has a list of websites that are reputable that, you know, the oncologists in town and all the providers that we work with have said, yeah, these are websites that we feel good about people getting information from.
As long as someone is pursuing a healthy path, whatever they may believe will help prevent the cancer from coming back in the future, as long as it's something that's not hurting them, doesn't it make sense for them, you know, if they believe that eating a vegetarian diet is something that will help them in the future, and that can be very healthy, although that's not necessarily something you'd recommend to all of your patients, is it okay to endorse that for someone and say, yes, you know, go ahead and pursue that path if it's what works for you?
I think absolutely. Whatever, as long as it's not hurting them, anything that empowers them to make healthy choices is great. We just make sure that, you know, in a vegetarian diet, make sure you're getting enough protein and calcium in your diet. So just evaluating what it is they're doing and making sure that all their health needs are being met.
Emmy, how do you help people deal with family members or other people who may be constantly trying to push them in certain directions?
Just with talking with them about things and kind of reaffirming maybe their beliefs or their what they've been doing on their own. You know, as Amy said, as long as they're doing the right things and feeling empowered themselves, a lot of times you have a lot of people in your life that are wanting to give you advice and it may be coming from a very good place, but maybe isn't correct advice. But also, again, just, you know, if it gets to a point where it's just too overwhelming for the patient, adding more stress to their life, then we have, you know, people that they can talk to about that and help them deal with that, because that can be very overwhelming. Even family members, friends that have all the best intentions can really add a lot of stress to that patient's life, just trying to keep everybody happy around them and feel like you're doing the right thing.
Of course, for cancer survivors, they also have a family who is worried about their future, and their children may be worried about their future. And I know you mentioned having classes for children or programs for children. Do you also offer therapy and other programs for the people in the life of the cancer survivor? These people, obviously, if somebody is coming up with, you know, you should try this because it prevents cancer, or you should try that, or you should do this. If somebody's working very hard to help that person stay healthy, they're also dealing with a lot of fear and a lot of stress themselves. Or if they're not doing that, they could be dealing with a lot of fear and a lot of stress. What can you do to help the people in the cancer survivor's family?
Well, one of the great things about the wellness program is that it's very open to not only the patient, but their caregivers and their support system. Any of the classes that we have, any of the programs that we offer, we encourage people to bring that support person with them, whether it's meeting with Matt and exercising. Matt has a lot of patients that come in that bring their spouse with them just to be that support person and be there with them and learn what they're learning. Same thing when meeting with any of our dietitians, any of our classes that we have available, and certainly with any of our counselors. We also offer group exercise classes. Right now we have a yoga and a Pilates class that are going on throughout the week, and people often ask, can I bring my friend, even though she doesn't have cancer, or can I bring my husband? Absolutely. We encourage that. We just want people to come and be there and be comfortable.
Matt, do you find that the people that you work with on exercise programs, do you find that they often get their families involved in getting more fit and healthy themselves?
That has happened quite a bit. And it's always great when I first meet with that patient for the first time, if there is that significant other that is there with them, because it shows that interest in the family. And a lot of times they'll come back every time just to see that progress. And they're like, you're doing amazing. And just those words of encouragement really push that patient on. But there's a lot of things where that significant other can join in, like Emmy said. So it's great.
Alan is on the line from Fairfield. Hello, Alan.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I'm the owner of the Cancer Victory Yahoo group. And one of the things that I emphasize in my 16 things one can do to off cancer on one's own is to get the lymph moving. And I was wondering if there is any best exercise, because I know that, and the thing that I mainly know about moving the lymph is massage. You know, you but that requires somebody else. And also a rebounder is good. But I was wondering what kind of exercise you all think is the best thing to move the limp, or is that something you emphasize at all?
How about you, Matt?
Yes, there is the lymph massage, but there's also different exercises that you can do. It's really hard to describe them on the air. But when I do meet with somebody that has had a lymph problem like lymphedema where they have swelling, whether it be in a leg or arm after surgery, it's something that I start every exercise program with, and then we also end with those exercises. And it really seems to help. The other thing is if they do have lymphedema, they must wear their sleeve if that's recommended by the by their oncologist. It's very important. A lot of people think, you know, especially the younger people, I'm young. Why is this happening to me? If I keep pushing through it, you know, it'll get better, which the lymph system doesn't work like that. If that swelling persists, it's only going to get worse. So the real thing is just to nip it in the bud. And to do those exercises and the lymph massage to get that under control.
Of course, no matter what someone does after they have cancer and they move into the future, sometimes they do experience a recurrence. Amy, when someone that you've worked with over time does experience a recurrence, I can only imagine that there must be, at some level, they must blame themselves. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with that?
And most people do. They think, if I had only done something differently, this wouldn't have happened. And we try to reassure them that there's no magic formula or anything they could have done to prevent it. 95% of the time, it's just bad luck. So it is an emotional journey for them, and it can be very difficult. We have a social worker and counselor in our office that can talk with patients and help them deal with reoccurrences. We can refer them, you know, back to the Cook Cancer Wellness Program if they have not been involved in a while, and meet with one of the counselors there too, and try to help them begin the journey of treatment again.
That must be so hard to climb that mountain a second time or a third time.
Yeah, it is, and that's. It's just as hard the second time, if not harder than the first time. And, you know, often the treatments the second time can be a little bit more difficult. So it's where we can really try to help them through exercise and managing their lifestyle to keep them active and do what they can do to be healthy during treatment again.
Emmy, if somebody comes to you again for a second time or a third time, do you change the things that you talk to them about when they set up a program with you?
Not necessarily what they would talk to me about. I mean, the conversations would obviously be a little bit different, but just, you know, reassuring them that the people are there in place for them for whatever their need might be, and just helping them to find those parts of the program that they're needing. Obviously, it's a very emotional time, maybe even more so than the first time around.
And Julie, let me ask you, because I know that you work with people who have a genetic predisposition to cancer. You look for that kind of genetic risk. That's something that happened in your life. How do you help people deal with their fear for their loved ones? If they carry a genetic predisposition to cancer, then their daughters might, or their mm-hmm. nieces or other people in their families. Yeah. How do you cope with that?
It's difficult to cope with. And I think that most of the folks that I see that have already been diagnosed with cancer, that's their primary concern. It's really not a concern for themselves. They're not worried about, oh, well, if I have a genetic mutation, I don't care. What I care about is that if I have a genetic mutation, did I pass it on to my children? And that's a huge worry for them. And I think that a couple of the patients that have it's been hardest for them have been when it's actually the father who has passed along a genetic mutation to his daughters. And so, you know, he's been thinking all of his life, well, you know, there's nothing in my background that, you know, I can take, you know, I'm the dad, I'm going to take care of my kids. And then to find out that I actually passed along a genetic mutation that highly contributed to their diagnosis of cancer, that can make people feel very guilty. So we have a lot of discussion when I talk to folks about whether or not to even get genetic testing. We want to make sure before they make that decision that they have thought all of this through, because when they actually get those test results, yes, it's still, you know, going to be something to think about. It might be a surprise one way or the other, but I want them to have sort of thought those issues through ahead of time.
An idea of what it might reveal.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And when someone finds out that they are genetically predisposed to having cancer, mm-hmm. that doesn't mean that they have cancer. That doesn't mean that they will have cancer.
Correct.
What kinds of decisions do they face at that point?
Well, depending on the type of cancer that they would be predisposed to get, there's surgery that people can do to help prevent cancer. For instance, with breast and ovarian cancer, which is probably the most common genetically tested cancer, you can have either breasts removed or ovaries removed, which of course to a lot of people sounds like an extremely drastic thing to do, and it is in some cases, but there are also a lot of increased surveillance that people can do. So we can step up our screening of people who are at that increased risk.
We have just a moment left, and I want each of you to think about what one thing would you tell someone who's just completed their treatment, and you probably have a chance to tell people who have just completed their treatment all the time, but what one thing do you really want someone who's looking at life after cancer to know? And Julie, I'll let you start.
Okay. I guess, you know, I always really want to congratulate somebody who's just completed their treatment because they have been through something that's very difficult. And unless you've actually been through it before, it's hard to really know. So I feel like I can really tell people, you know, I know what you went through and it was hard and you need to be really, really proud that you did that. And things will get better day by day and you'll go on and you'll live the rest of your life and it'll be awesome.
Amy, how about you?
I would focus on the fact that surviving cancer is a continual process. It's a journey, and you're going to have good days and bad days. And some days you're going to feel strong, and other days you're going to be very worried that your cancer is coming back. And that's very normal, and it will get better with time.
Emmy?
I guess I would just encourage them that, you know, they've come through a lot, and just to really focus on them and continue their journey of wellness and, you know, whatever we can do to help them with that.
And how about you, Matt?
I think I would still stress that to live a healthy lifestyle as you can, but also for a lot of people, they think once that treatment ends that cancer is cured. And for many people, that next 5 years, once your hair grows back, everybody on the outside doesn't even know that you had cancer. So at that point, it's really difficult for them because they are still struggling with many of the aspects, but nobody knows that. So it kind of brings them down. So stay positive throughout that entire process.
And do you, when you talk to people about that, do you have any recommendation for how they can share that struggle, how they can make others feel or understand how they're feeling?
I think that's one thing about cancer, that when you're actually going through it, others that have had cancer will talk to you about it, but it's up to those people that have had cancer in the past to go up and express what they went through, to really talk to them about it.
Right. Well, thank you all so much for your time today. Matt Schmitz is a cancer exercise specialist at St. Luke's Cook Cancer Wellness Program. Emmy Chapman is a registered nurse and the cancer wellness coordinator at that program. Amy Gonski is a nurse practitioner at Iowa Blood and Cancer Care, a Physicians Clinic of Iowa. And Julie Thompson is a nurse practitioner and cancer risk counselor at St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids. Thank you very much. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.